Trendstorm.
Welcome back to Trendstorm. Now let's take a look at the aftermath of the Christchurch terrorist attack. Last week's terrorist attack in New Zealand caused the entire world to weep in sorrow after a white supremacist killed at least 50 Muslim worshippers in a spree of carnage that's bound to have serious sociopolitical consequences. Brenton Tarrant's explicitly fascist manifesto leaves no question about the killer's motives, but raises serious concerns about how he was radicalized and whether there are more sleeper cells like him waiting to strike soft targets that they associate with Muslim migrants. The terrorist apparently hadn't been shy about his beliefs online either, so it's a surprise that he wasn't officially on any government watch list when considering that his native Australia is part of the Five Eyes global surveillance superstructure. New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern vowed to reform her country's gun laws in the immediate aftermath of this tragedy, and it can also be assumed that the state security services and Australia's will investigate why this terrorist didn't appear on their radar until after he began his attack. Speaking of which, Tarrant notoriously live-streamed the first 17 minutes of his shooting spree on Facebook until the local police made the company aware of it and got the footage taken down. So it's possible that an attempt might be made to regulate social media after what just happened. Relatedly, the West's traditional laissez-faire notions of free speech might also be in the process of changing after two controversial incidents. Right-wing provocateur Milo Yiannopoulos was banned from entering Australia for his upcoming tour after tweeting inflammatory comments about Islam and later blaming the victims for going to what he described as a terrorist factory. A few days later, an unnamed individual was arrested in New Zealand for allegedly violating its Films, Videos, and Publications Classification Act by sharing footage of Tarrant's massacre on social media despite the authorities warning people not to. Both cases divided people over the issue of whether the state overstepped its bounds by infringing on free speech or if it was completely in the right for responsibly tackling hate speech before it incited another terrorist attack. While these are the sociopolitical consequences thus far, many more might soon unfold too. Folks, on behalf of all of us here at Radio Sputnik and the Trendstorm team, we are really so sorry about what happened. I mean, it really struck us so deeply in our hearts to hear about this tragedy. This terrorist attack was disgusting. It's terrible. And we 100% strongly condemn it in whatever terms possible to get the point across. It was evil. It was terrible. But it was nevertheless a very important event, and that's why we're discussing it today on our program. So we're going to speak exclusively for the entirety of our segment with Mr. Christopher Coleman. He's a New Zealand political commentator.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Christopher, some observers have pointed to the terrorist time in Europe during the height of the migrant crisis as an example of an experience that could have radicalized him. So what do you think about that theory? And if that's the case, then how likely is it that there are others just like him planning other attacks?
Yes. Firstly, Andrew, it's a pleasure to talk. And I would like to express how saddened I am regarding the terrible loss of life in the terrorist attack here, and also my gratitude for the support we've had from around the world. Now to the question. Well, I would consider it as a contributing factor, though I lay the blame principally with the media and our governments, who for years have demonized Muslims and, to a lesser extent, immigration. The internet is also a contributing element where like-minded people tend to group together and ideas are fostered amongst one another. This terrorist appears to have had contacts from various parts of the world who shared the same view. Regarding how likely it is that there are others like him, I would say it's almost inevitable. This wasn't the first terrorist attack, and with a certain percentage of the population in many countries continuing to be radicalized, it's difficult to see it as being the last.
Okay, now one of the other things I want to ask you about, Christopher, is, I mean, we know that the terrorists went through a lot of effort to promote the so-called Clash of Civilizations narrative by scrawling the names of historic figures, battles, and even slogans onto his guns and gear. But how successful do you think he'll ultimately be then in provoking inter-civilizational tensions in the West and beyond? Because it seems like that was his main point in not only carrying out the terrorist attack, but also going through so much time and effort in making a big deal about the Clash of Civilizations narrative part of it.
Yes, that's right. So at a societal level and within certain countries, tension has increased over the years between groups on religious, ethnic, and nationalistic lines. But I don't believe this individual's terrorist attack will provoke a clash of civilizations. I see it more as a continuation of similar tragic terrorist attacks on civilians by civilians. Conflicts at a national level, however, have been for geopolitical reasons, power, control, resources, and wealth, such as the US's bombing campaigns, coup d'etats, and occupations in Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, for example. The issue is that in order to seek support from the public to do so, our media and government demonize these predominantly Muslim countries and dehumanize their people. We've been told they're dangerous, they're terrorists, and they're the enemy. A side effect is that a certain percentage of people will believe it's true, and you only need one person to believe it enough, and you can end up with what this Australian did here in Christchurch on Friday. So essentially, I see the conflicts at a national level continuing to be for geopolitical reasons, and within countries, a continuation of sporadic attacks by radicalized individuals, radicalized principally by the narrative and manipulation by the media and governments in order to justify their bombing campaigns, invasions, and occupations.
Okay, I see. Well, then, Christopher, on the topic of civilizations then more broadly, some people say that it's a so-called betrayal of Western values for Australia to ban Milo and for New Zealand to arrest someone for sharing the terrorist very grisly footage of that terrorist attack. But what do you think about that? Are those government actions responsible or irresponsible, dangerous or safe? I mean, how do you interpret that?
Yes, well, firstly, I'd say that the term Western values is an interesting, rather broad term intended, if not to imply superiority over other cultures, then certainly meant to imply desirability. In a social context, it refers to freedom, equality, ethics, and the like. I would argue that these Western values are extremely tenuous. For example, the US has the highest incarceration rate in the world. Our governments have large surveillance mechanisms. There is high inequality in many places and very poor social mobility in some. The lower classes are still predominantly occupied by native populations, for example, the Maori here in New Zealand, and likewise for Aboriginal Australians. That's in our own country. And the so-called Western values that are projected overseas are even less appealing. Our countries bomb and occupy foreign countries, carry out mass murder, subjugate local populations, steal resources. So the term with its desirable implications is quite far from the reality. Now, talking specifically about the action of arresting the individual here in New Zealand, for sharing the video of Friday's terrorist attack in Christchurch, it was also for having allegedly incited violence, having posted a photo of one of the mosques with the words "target acquired." I'm in favour of the New Zealand government's response in this case, as I believe there needs to be limits to freedom of speech, and inciting violence against a particular section of the population, especially considering it was based on their religion, isn't acceptable in my opinion. Now, I do realise that the free speech subject is a difficult one, and I don't claim to know exactly where to draw the line, but I do think a line needs to be drawn somewhere, including before this individual's behaviour. With respect to Australia banning Milo from entering, I don't know enough about Milo's actions or rhetoric to know whether it was appropriate or not.
Trendstorm.
Okay, well, I think those are some pretty good points, especially about how a line eventually needs to be drawn, because you can have free speech, but I mean, nobody is entitled to spread hate or incite violence, let alone terrorist attacks against any type of population, whether within their country or abroad. So that's an excellent point right there. Now, Christopher, how do you think Western security services should respond to right-wing leaning individuals who show signs of radicalization? And also, just as importantly, who would make that determination in the first place? place and how would it be made? And should these individuals be monitored from afar, refer to voluntary de-radicalization programs, or something else entirely?
Well, regarding this attack in Christchurch, I would say that it appears to be a failure of the New Zealand Intelligence Agency and probably the Australian Intelligence Agency too, given that he is Australian. He appears to have participated in far-right online chat groups, acquired a small arsenal of weapons, and had been planning this attack for quite some time. It's now apparent that our intelligence agency had focused too much on potential Islamist threats while neglecting the threat of the far-right. It's also emerged that in 2016, a pig's head had been delivered to one of the two mosques targeted last Friday, so there were clear warning signs that weren't heeded. Now, in general terms, I'm in favour of monitoring extremist behaviour and taking action when credible threats of violence are made. As I've mentioned previously, much of this radicalisation comes from the behaviour of our very own governments and media and their need to justify constant bombing campaigns and invasions of predominantly Muslim countries. So they're now forced to try to prevent radicalised individuals from acting out on ideas that have been fermented by themselves.
Okay, Christopher. Now, the last thing I'd like to speak with you about today is the issue of gun control. I mean, this has obviously come up in the New Zealand government just restricted gun rights in the wake of this terrorist attack. But then again, there are some folks who think that liberalizing gun rights could actually help civilians defend themselves if this ever happens again. And they point to the fact that it took approximately 20 minutes or so for the authorities to respond to the latest terrorist attack. So, Christopher, where do you stand on this very heated debate then about gun rights?
Well, New Zealand has a high rate of gun ownership, with there being roughly 26 guns per 100 people. That puts New Zealand around 20th in the world for number of civilian-held firearms per capita. Having said that, New Zealand ranks roughly 160th of the roughly 180-odd countries for murders by guns, and police don't routinely carry firearms on their person. In extraordinary circumstances, like this past week, they have been armed for guarding mosques. However, usually police firearms are stored in secure cabinets within frontline patrol cars. So although there is a relatively high level of gun ownership, it hasn't been much of a public issue due to low death by firearm rate. I'm not aware of any polling data on New Zealand public opinion regarding this topic. Of course, after this terrorist attack, Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern said that gun laws will tighten because some of the weapons acquired by the perpetrator were tremendously powerful and had also been enhanced by modifications, which seems to me totally unjustifiable for a member of the public to have. I would add that although I personally agree with this decision to tighten gun ownership laws, it appears that the decision will be taken by the Prime Minister and government without much public consultation or a referendum, just as we had no say regarding our country's decision on the TPP agreement or sending troops to Iraq or MP pay rises, etc. As in so many countries, the public plays very little part in the decision-making of many important issues.
Okay, Christopher, thank you for speaking with us today. Once again, I am so sorry about what happened, and I appreciate that you can come onto a program today to help us make sense of everything, why it occurred, and what might come next. I also thought it was very informative how our interview touched upon the larger topics of civilizations, values, and especially, as you reaffirmed many times, the pernicious role of the media in all of this. So folks, if you want to sound off and share what you think about this, please send us an email at radio@sputniknews.com or find us on Facebook. Stay with us.